Congress.com.
It's the smoking gun. It's high-level officials, and they say that Hillary's been briefed about it.
That's conservative filmmaker and founder of Project Veritas Action, James O'Keefe. He appeared on Trending Today USA with Rusty Humphries yesterday.
So you're telling me all that violence, or a lot of that violence that we're seeing at Trump rallies, is caused by operatives that have been paid for by people working with the Democrat Party and Hillary Clinton?
That's correct. They took credit for a number of the high-profile ones. Chicago, where Trump canceled that event. Remember that?
The latest on a disgraced New York City congressman, a grand jury now expected to begin hearing evidence in former New York City Congressman Anthony Weiner's alleged sexting with a 15-year-old North Carolina girl. As sources tell the New York Post, the grand jury will convene by the end of this month. The girl claims the former Democratic lawmaker sent her sexually explicit messages and photos between January and July of this year. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Love sports articles but don't have time to search the web looking for the most compelling stories? Then US Sports Pages is for you. Why spend hours going to multiple sites looking to find sports articles when we can do the work for you? Our producers go through every newspaper in the country and pick out the best sports articles separated by sport, dramatically reducing your prep time. We also include sports and entertainment kicker stories. USSportsPages.com is the only site you'll need to get your sports fix. Check us out today, the daily links at USSportsPages.com.
The terrorist bombing suspect Ahmad Rahami, wounded in a police shootout in Linden, New Jersey last month, is now well enough to be transferred to a state prison. We get the update from Sarah Lee Kessler in New York.
Rahami was moved to a hospital ward Tuesday at the New Jersey State Prison in Trenton. The move comes less than a week after the Elizabeth man pleaded not guilty to attempted murder and weapons charges stemming from that shootout with police. Rahami is also accused of detonating a bomb at the Jersey Shore and the one in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood last month that injured 31 people.
Again, that's Sarah Lee Kessler reporting. Now correspondent Sarah Jacobs tells us that North Carolina's Republican Governor Pat McCrory blames liberals for the state's controversial bathroom law.
In a debate with his Democratic opponent last night, McCrory said lawmakers would never have passed that bill if the Charlotte City Council had not enacted an ordinance allowing transgender people to use bathrooms that match their gender identity.
A troubling milestone in the city of Chicago. It's recorded its 600th murder this year. Last year, that city saw fewer than 500 homicides. The Windy City's National League ball team, the Cubs, shut out by the Dodgers in Game 3 of the National League Championship Series. So L.A. is now up 2-1 in that best of seven. Game 4 is tonight in L.A. And the Cleveland Indians hold a 3-1 lead over Toronto in the ALCS, which resumes this afternoon. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Well, good afternoon. The weather for Hunterdon County, it is currently 82 degrees. It is partly sunny, and the high is of 83 is expected. Tonight will be partly cloudy with a low of 55. There is a chance of rain tomorrow, Thursday, with the high near 70. Thursday night, also a chance of showers. Chance of precipitation will be about 40%. On Friday, showers are likely, mostly cloudy. However, on Saturday also, a chance of showers, mainly before 9 a.m., and then it will turn mostly sunny. And Sunday will be mostly sunny with a high near 59. So enjoy the end of Indian summer. Winter is coming.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program, no drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormones. hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor-supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited-time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamura-Roll, your host for today's program. I'm also a licensed professional counselor. And today I have a guest. Heidi Davis is my guest. And as a lot of you know, I don't usually have guests, so this is a great experience for me, and I think this is Heidi's first time to be on radio. And she, I'll just give you a little background. She is actually my neighbor and a fantastic neighbor. I'm so lucky to have her. And one of the things that she does is she has this marvelous calling, which is to foster babies. And for those of you that might have seen on Facebook, a lot of the babies that she fosters are addicted to heroin, and it's a real problem. And I'm so proud to know her and the fact that she does this, but I think it's also important to get people to know that this is a real problem and that she actually is sort of doing some groundbreaking, making some groundbreaking inroads into helping these babies and maybe even getting some laws changed. And so we're going to talk about that today. So welcome, Heidi. Maybe you can tell a little bit about how you got involved in this in the first place.
Thanks, first of all, for having me. I appreciate this opportunity. It was just kind of like a fluke. I had my third baby, and pregnancy and I didn't get along, and I was like, you know what? I'll show you, and I'll have another baby. And we got our first foster baby, who we have since adopted, Shariah. She is now 6 years of age. I got her at 16 months old.
Oh, wow.
That child came to me not walking. She could not walk. They kept her in her crib. Oh, she could not eat. She was 16 months old without being able to chew a Cheerio when I got her night. I don't think she had ever had in a bath. We've been through tons of trials and tribulations with her, but she's fantastic. She's 6 years old. She just had a birthday. And she's doing wonderful.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart.
She is a great little girl who has overcome the neglect and basic child abuse from her parents.
Oh, that's so sad for her early beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but since her, you have really adopted, well, not adopted, but fostered other babies.
Yes,
that,
I'm on to baby number four.
Baby number four. And I guess one of the things that you're experiencing is a lot of them are born addicted.
It's at an uncontrollable rate that these children are being born to, basically it's this exposure of the heroin. The heroin is right now the biggest struggle for these parents that are having these children. The baby that I have right now in my care, from my understanding, the information that I was given, her mother was basically doing heroin up until the moment of delivery. So this baby is doing absolutely fantastic. She did have a rough start, a rough go of it. She was in the NICU for X amount of days, and I picked her up from the NICU. But we've been to the neurologist. She gets early intervention therapy once a week. She's getting swim lessons once a week. So it's a very time consuming. You know, we were very lucky. She didn't have a lot of tremors. She didn't have a lot of the vomiting that once I picked her up from the hospital. But I mean, that's not for each and every kid. I mean, every kid that is born addicted has different issues.
Sure.
Because you never know, like, what the, like, yes, you'll hear an opiate or heroin, but you don't know if that's been added with other cocktails.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, you could have your methadone, you could have your Suboxone, your heroin, and all of that mixed together. You really don't know, in essence, what these kids have been subjected to.
Right. And so, I have worked with teens that were born addicted and are currently using. And from my perspective, I look at it as a relapse for them. I don't look at it as if, oh, now they're beginning to get involved in drugs. They were born already addicted.
They're addicted.
Yeah.
The moment that they have their first breath, they are born addicted.
Yeah.
And that addiction, that's what scares me the most, and that's why I want to change what I can for these little people right now, because unfortunately in the foster care system, these children do not have the rights. Basically, if mom and dad are doing, you know, the court says A, B, C, and D, you do this and that, and here's the prize at the end of the tunnel, your child. So the support system isn't there for the baby, and me as a foster parent, I can only do what I can do because I'm not allowed to go to the court. The judge really doesn't want to hear from us. We don't have any laws that protect us as resource parents.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, a lot of people don't understand that. So, you know, you can go to court and mom or dad could test positive. And even if there is a positive urine screen or drug test, that baby still gets to see mom and dad. There's no repercussions for their actions. And what I feel right now with the way that the heroin is going is that we should have specific guidelines. So like a passport type deal. So if you've had a dirty urine, as they call it, and
right,
they should, you know, automatically, okay, you know what, until you can have a clean urine, you shouldn't have the access to your child.
Right.
But, you know, they have to be fully aware and fully like to be accountable for their actions.
Right.
This poor baby or babies did not ask for this.
Right.
They did not say, ooh, let me be born addicted. And, you know, these babies are fighting a battle that no one has any idea about.
Right.
Because it's like a shh type thing. It's everything's on the quiet.
Yeah, we don't talk about it. I know that there was something I remember seeing it, reading it somewhere probably last year, that they're actually opening up detox centers for infants. That's how bad it is. And that it's an epidemic.
It is. And the other epidemic that we have going on right now in New Jersey as a foster parent who goes full force, and I know I'm not the only one, but there's children that basically from the actions of their parents where they're born with these addictions and they have, you know, issue after issue after issue, fluid on the brain, you know, for hospitalization, stop breathing. You know, we need medical homes for this because as a resource parent, we're not equipped.
Right.
We don't have the knowledge. We don't have the nursing doctor background to know what's going on with these children. But I also feel that if a child is born addicted before they're released from the hospital, whether it be to their bio parent or whether to the division or myself or anybody, there should be a standard procedure of testing. Like there should be an MRI. There should be, you know, CAT scan of the brain to make sure everything's functioning in the brain, to make sure everything's A-okay. You know, a friend of mine, her little guy aspirated a couple months ago. And he now was hospitalized, and basically, you know, the hospital has to they're mandated to contact the proper authorities. And now there's an open case up on this foster mom, and she and her husband did everything that they were supposed to do. And this poor little guy's like in limbo where he should be with a family who is medically capable of knowing the signs and symptoms. And, you know, we're not taught that.
So that you don't get any training.
You can take training online,
mm-hmm.
You know, like basic stuff, like feelings and stuff like that. But right. It's not like they have courses to say, okay, well, you're going to take in this medically equipped child with a breathing treatment and this.
Right.
We're really not taught.
Okay.
For that type of capacities.
So how does one get involved in, you know, let's say I decide I think I'd like to become a foster parent. How does one get involved in that?
There is a 800 number, and you can look it up. You could actually go to the state of New Jersey, and it comes up as like 1-877-NJ-FOSTER or something along that lines, and you can start doing that. And then you have to take PRIDE training, which is basically you go in and they teach you and talk to you about, you know, certain type of things. If you have questions and stuff like that, they'll answer that, and you have to do X amount of hours of that. And then you have to have your house inspected. You have to do background checks, fingerprints, psychological background. You know, there's nothing that they leave unturned.
Okay.
There's nothing private. And you just wait. You wait until you get that first phone call. And then the journey begins.
Okay.
That's how it works.
Well, we have to take a little commercial break and let our sponsors have their say. So we'll be back in just a few moments with Heidi Davis. I'm Ruth Altamura-Roll, your host for Counselor's Chat.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hey, this is Big Z of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunting Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunting Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
This is Tony Clark, Parrot Planner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I'm Ruth Altamura-Roll, your host for today's program. And I have a guest today, Heidi Davis. She is here to talk about her experience as being a foster mom and fostering babies that have been born addicted to heroin, what their needs are, and her experience, and also just to let people know that this is a real crisis. I'm just kind of looking at a few statistics here that I have in front of me, and it says 1 out of every 100 babies in New Jersey are born addicted. That is quite a huge number.
And I can guarantee you from the moment that that was put out there, it's increased.
Yeah,
drastically.
I'm sure it has. The statistic is from 2014, so it's just a constant rise. Maybe you can share a little bit about what happens to these babies.
Well, depending on what their addiction is, they'll probably, if it is heroin or something along that line, some sort of opiate, they will stay into the NICU until they can be weaned off. 9 times out of 10, the babies are put on morphine. So the baby will be weaned off the morphine, and they have to be 48 hours clear of the morphine before they can be released. And the reason that they're given the morphine is to basically subside the pain of the withdrawal, right, because the baby's going through withdrawal just as much as the mother would be doing.
Right, which is really painful.
Yes, which could be vomiting. It could be tremors. They have a sensitivity to light.
Mm.
So a lot of the times you'll see the babies with the mask on their eyes.
Okay.
Because the light just puts them into, like, I don't want to say like convulsions, but pretty much that's what it is. You know, I've been lucky. I haven't really had children that have, the two that I had from the NICU, I don't think that they came to me with a lot of the tremors. They both have adjusted very well. The one that's with me right now, she has a muscle core problem,
mm-hmm,
which the neurologist told me that he basically feels that that's part of from the usage. So, you know, we do her strengthening core and all of that type of stuff, but each child's different. You know, you don't know what you're getting until the day goes on. So,
right. You
know, she leans to the right. We're working on building her strength, like, because she doesn't have those core muscles.
Yeah.
So that's basically what we're doing for her for right now.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's come up so far, thankfully.
So what happens in terms of her visitation with her parents? I mean, what's...
Basically, in the state of New Jersey, pretty much across the board, which is another thing I want to change, these parents are entitled to their visits. It is their parental right to have these visits. So right now, the baby that I have, she does get visitation 2 days a week. It's for 2 hours at a time. And that's basically how it works. Mom, it has been court ordered to have 24-hour confirmation before the visit, which is fantastic. Because we as foster parents, we're basically put on the back burner, like, okay, there's a visit, there's not a visit, the visit's on, the visit's off. And, you know, as a mom, being a mom to so many children, you know, my time is as valuable as anyone else's. And that's what a lot of us as resource parents go through. Like, we're the ones taking the kids to the neurologist for the MRIs, for the therapy. And, you know, if you have that 2 hours of freedom to go to the grocery store, take a shower in peace, you want that. And unfortunately, the resource parents, we don't rate.
Mm-hmm.
On the totem pole. Neither does the baby. It's all about the parents. That's how it works.
Yeah. Are they mandated to treatment or anything?
Everything is different. It's not straight across the board, which is another one of my things that I want to change. So if, for instance, the case that I have right now, we're on our second judge. The first judge that we had, they switch judges from county to county. So the judge that we had prior said certain things. Now this judge is saying different things. It's nothing like it's straight across. You know what I mean? So you could have parent A who that judge tells them to do B and C. Then you could have judge B who says, all right, well, they got to do X and Y, but forget the Z. So in my opinion, with this, the way that the things are going with these heroin babies, it needs to be straight across the board from county to county, from judge to judge. There should be a checklist. You're not doing this? Okay. You know, that's fine. Mark it down.
Right.
Let's move on to the next. But there shouldn't be so much leeway, like where the judge feels like, okay, well, we'll do it this way, or okay, we should do it that way. Because at the end of the day, the caseworker gets to go home, bio parents get to live their lives and do whatever they want to do, but they're not the ones that go home and are living this life for 24/7.
Right.
They're not the ones in the middle of the night if the baby's crying or sick or doing the therapy or, you know, running up to the hospital for their appointments. It's like once they leave that courtroom or they leave that visit, even for the caseworkers, they get to go home. We don't. We live this on a day in and a day out basis, and that needs to be taken accounted for.
Yeah.
You know, like, our voices should be heard. We're the ones that are caring for these kids. And it's an unfortunate thing. Like, in essence, we're raising these babies.
Right.
Or these children. Or these teens. That's who's doing it. Not the bio parents or the judges or the caseworkers or the attorneys. It's us.
And with very little training.
Very little training. Very little, I don't want to say support in essence, but each county of the division is different too. Like, I have to say, Somerset County division has been nothing but fantastic for me,
mm-hmm,
towards me and my family. They treat us wonderfully. I have no issues whatsoever. As as in the Law Guardians as well. They, you know, at the end of the day, they're doing fantastic for what they can do, but it's the bio parents' attorneys and the judge that they have the upper hand.
Right.
So that's how it works.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest problems that we still face is, from my perspective as a therapist, is that we still are not looking at addiction as a disease.
It's a disease.
So that the courts are not mandating people to treatment.
Right.
So you may end up in jail, and that you may end up in treatment, but it's not straight across the board.
It's not. And the other sad part to that is, too, sometimes these babies or children, they have to go to the prison to see the incarcerated parent for their weekly visit. And what child wants to be put through that? And it's sad. These kids are our future, and they did not ask for this, and they should not be subjected to this type of, how I feel, it's child abuse.
Right.
It really is. It's mental.
So what I'm hearing you say is they're actually putting the needs of the parents
Absolutely.
Before the mm-hmm. needs of the child.
Because mm-hmm. it's their biological right. The biological parents' right. They are the parent. They are the ones that made this baby. They are the ones that gave birth to this baby. They may parent these children physically,
mm-hmm.
but for me, it's more or less anyone can be a parent, but it takes strong people to be a mom and a dad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're seeing right now. A lot of the addiction is just, that's their vice.
Right.
And in my opinion, I feel like if you can't fight it, have at it. But then, you know, if that's what you want to do with your life, fine. But then at the end of the day, be grown up enough, you're making that decision.
Right.
Then let your kids go.
Right. So if you're choosing to stay, you know, active in your disease of addiction,
right,
then maybe you need to consider giving your child up.
And I don't mean it in a way of that I have any less regard for them
right.
being an addict or addicted to anything. But also as a parent, you know, to see what these kids go through.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not just saying for my four kids.
No.
I mean, across the board with resource parents, it's horrible.
Well, having had years of experience working in the drug and alcohol field myself, some of you may know I've worked at the Good News Home for Women here in Flemington. I also worked at Crawford House, which is a halfway house for women, who quite often they would sometimes lose their children. Their children would be in foster care. It was a long-term program. And so often women might say, well, I was always a good mom, but as we begin to talk about it, they begin to recognize how their addiction really got in the way of them being a good mom. Mm-hmm. And, sometimes their children were, you know, not only put in foster care, but were adopted. And that is one of the consequences of the disease of addiction. I say this all the time. It is one of the most complicated diseases that we have because
Absolutely.
It's not only physical, it's social, it's relational, it's familial, it's spiritual, it's, you know, it's physical. It's just, it invades every aspect of a human being. And to then say, okay, someone who is just so, has been so warped and twisted by a drug that has altered their brain. It's a brain disease.
Mm-hmm.
And then to say, okay, and now here's your kids, be good parents without having good solid recovery is criminal, I will say, you know, mm-hmm. for that child. And also as a therapist, I can't even begin to tell you how many people I have that come into my office. Like I said, you know, teens who are born addicted and who are now using, but not only that, people who are in their 30s and 40s and sometimes even 50s and 60s who grew up in families where there was addiction and the way it's just affected their lives continuously. Broken relationships, low self-esteem, physical issues. It just goes on and on. And so it becomes a generational problem. And one of the best things is you got to get it right at the beginning. And for the babies that you're working with, that's exactly where it needs to begin with those children so that they can then have a healthy life.
Right. I agree. And that's the other thing, too. Like, these children aren't basically given the therapy. I think that there's so many children that they slip through the cracks.
Right.
They just slip right through. Like, there's not enough caseworkers for the amount of children that there are. And I'm not faulting at all the division. I think that, you know, for what they're handled, they're given and to handle in a day. I mean, because they're doing just as much as the loophole work that we do as resource parents. You never know if the parent's going to comply. You never know if the parent's going to show up for the drug screen. You don't know if, am I going to the house to pick up this parent to take them to the visit, or am I just showing up for nothing? So, I mean, and that's what I try to do. I try to work well with my caseworkers so that we're both on the same page. And I do the same thing with the law guardian, so that when we go to court, we're able to document and have the documentation in front of us to show the judge to say, listen, you know what, we need this, or we need this therapy or that therapy, or, you know, whatever that may be at that time. But unfortunately, we have to all work together and be united to fight this battle, because it's not going to get any better before it gets a lot worse.
Yeah.
And at the rate that we're going right now, it's terrible.
And, you know, I will say that a lot of times people, they don't think. I'm going to say that. They don't think. They don't ask the question, well, where does heroin come from?
Mm-hmm.
Where does it come from? Well, you know what? It's coming from Mexico. It's coming from Ecuador. It's coming from Colombia. It's coming up through our border. And we have this epidemic that's affecting babies. It's affecting our teenagers. It's affecting our young people. You know, kids are dying all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really, and I'm going to be a little political, we really need to think about what's going on in this upcoming election and make a wise decision. Because I think our borders are creating part of this problem. Because they're open. And anybody's coming in, bringing all the drugs. The cartel's no longer selling the marijuana. We're taking care of that ourselves. We're doing a good job selling our own marijuana. It's the new gold crop. People who know me know how I'm against pot. I'm a drug and alcohol counselor. I'm against pot. So, you know, the cartels are losing money. So where are they going to make their money? Heroin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you think, well, where are these kids getting it? That's where they're getting it.
And it's very inexpensive.
Yeah.
It's very inexpensive. And I had no idea. Like, I thought it was very top of the line, and it's not.
No.
It's, you know, you can get your hit for $5-$10.
Yeah.
And, you know, pocket change.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not what I had envisioned it to be. And the other thing, too, is that people aren't aware of is that heroin is an opiate. So if you have a parent or a person, shall say, who's addicted to, like, Suboxone or the methadone, for them to get the pill probably costs them $20-$30 on the street. So with that being said, in their hit, it's probably going to take them 4 pills.
Right.
So do the math.
Right.
You know, it's cheaper to get that fix from your heroin.
Right.
That could possibly be laced with the fentanyl.
Right.
So that's where we're at. This is why heroin is just, because the other thing, too, to realize is that with the parents that are in under their child is in foster care and they have to do the drug screens and all that, if they have a prescription for, you know, methadone or Suboxone, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If they do not have a prescription, that's when the problem is. But in my opinion, I feel that even if they're taking this thing, this pill,
right,
with a prescription, that's not helping the problem. All it's doing is masking the issue at hand.
Right.
May make them good for right now for the next 6 weeks, but we don't know 6 weeks from now, are we going to have a slip? And then there we go. The whole process starts again.
Right.
So it's extension after extension. And here we go, these babies who need the loving, caring home to grow up and have a wonderful life.
Right.
With parents that are full-fledged, hands-on, wanting that for their child, you have your addictive parent who is making the wrong decisions.
Right.
And unfortunately,
and we don't even have enough treatment programs for parents.
Mm-mm.
There's such a gap. And again, like I said, it's still looked at, excuse me, as a social and moral issue? Well, maybe a little bit, and yet still it's still a disease, and it still needs to get treated, and it's a complicated treatment, and insurance companies run the length of treatment, and people that are in my field know that it's a good 18 months to 2 years of treatment. 18 months to 2 years.
See,
not 14 days, not 28 days.
Right, and that's basically the other thing that I had put down. I've been in contact with a couple senators and a couple assemblymen in my county, and in regards to that, like, I basically laid it out for them. Like, I feel that, you know, they should be mandated to 30 days in-house program.
Right.
Not an IOP, not a hospital stay for 5 days to detox, and then you have your outpatient therapy, because that's not helping the problem. All it's doing is masking.
Right.
And it's giving them a little bit of, oh, I'm clean. But in essence, they're not, because they're not affected. They're not getting to that core.
Right. Well, this is what I say to my clients that come to me that are in very early recovery. I say to them, we talk about clean and sober, that there's a difference. Clean is I go take a pee test and my urine comes out clean and there's no drugs in my system. That's clean. Sober is a way of life. It's being responsible. It's being able to pay your bills. It's making sure that you stay in treatment, because addiction is a treatable disease. There's no cure for it, but it's treatable. So I'm going to make sure I'm in treatment. I'm taking care of my health. I've got a job. I'm taking care of my bills. I'm living, you know, I'm making choices of having healthy people in my life. I'm not going to hang out with my friends that are also using drugs. That's sober. Mm-hmm. And so creating, and this is the other thing I say, it's like saying, well, heck, you know what? I'm going to become Chinese. I'm going to change my culture. I'm going to go from living a drug culture to living a sober culture. So if I'm going to change from being an American to being Chinese, or from being American to being French, I need to speak French, I need to dress French, I need to eat French, I need to get to the point where I even dream in French.
Mm-hmm.
I need to change everything about me, and that doesn't happen in 30 days. It just doesn't happen.
It's a life-changing event.
It is.
It's a life-changing event in regards to deciding if you're equipped to make the right choices, not only for yourself.
Right.
But you're going to have to be able to make the right choices for your child.
Yeah.
And if you can't make the right choices for yourself,
right,
how are you going to make the right choices for your child and or children?
Right. Exactly. I mean, if you think about it, okay, so I've got 10 days clean, and, you know, the judge says that I can have visitation, and, you know, I don't have the coping skills for patience. I don't have the coping skills on how to manage my anger. We're putting children at risk, because I don't know how to, you know, I can't get my baby to stop crying. I'm getting really angry. I don't have the patience. I'm short-tempered. I'm still cranky because I am having post-acute withdrawal.
And sleepless nights with a baby.
Exactly. And so we're going to say, here, you can have your child back. We're actually putting these child in harm's way.
We are. And that's another thing that I feel. I feel like when the child is in the division's care and or resource parent care, we give the parents so many services, so many opportunities, so many hiccups. Let's move past it. And then at the end of our X amount of time, whether it be extended, not extended, permanency, adoption, permanency, back and forth, then we're giving them these children back. Here's your kids. And then they have nothing. So if they don't have their support system at home for when these babies go home, that's when we're going to have a mess up. And so far, I have to say, the cases that I've had, two of my kids have gone home, and, you know, they're doing great. They both have the support system. The second child, her dad and I have a fantastic relationship. The third one, her parents and I have a fantastic relationship. If they need me, I'm here.
So one of the things that I'm hearing is that, I don't know if it's something that the foster care system encourages, or is this just something that you yourself have done, which is foster relationship with the parents? Do they encourage that, or do they discourage that, or?
Well, what I will say, for me, my choice, it works for me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to work for everybody? Probably not. Does every caseworker tell you, yes, go out and be friendly with these parents? No. But for me to do what I do and how I do what I do, I would rather build a bond and a relationship with these parents, because each case, the goal is reunification.
Right.
So if my little people go home, as I call them little people, mm-hmm. if they do go home, I want to be able to know how everything's going. I want to be able to have that relationship with them. It's unfortunate for my adopted daughter that her family sees my family as the reason she was in foster care was because of us.
Hmm.
And that's not how it works. So that one's a tough one, because I think once they go home, it's different.
Right.
But like for my foster kids that have been reunified, it works for me. And that's all I can really say. I really can't say whether or not the division says yes or the division says no. I think it's just a personal preference.
Now, I know that sometimes foster families get a bad rap. Like, sometimes we hear children are abused by foster families and that kind of thing. Maybe you could talk a little bit about that, because my experience of you is you're fantastic.
Well, thank you. For me, I feel that, yes, there has been cases of abuse through foster family resource parents. Do I agree with that? Absolutely not. But then again, at the end of the day, you never know. Your neighbor could be abusing their children and nobody would know. It's behind a closed door.
Right.
In my opinion, I feel that they should be a little bit more. I mean, things have gotten a lot tighter since I've started this foster. I've almost 5 years in. So things have gotten a little bit different from when I first started. It seems to be a little bit more tighter, like where they're looking at more loopholes and
right,
stuff
okay.
like that. Like, I think a lot of these issues were way back.
Okay.
I could be wrong. But I also feel that, like for me, you know, my house is a revolving door. I have people in and out all the time to check on the baby.
Yes, this is true.
to make sure that...
and the chickens.
Yes. to make sure that I'm doing the right by
right.
the baby. So, you know, every week I have a therapist coming in. Once a month I have the caseworker coming in. Every 3 months the nurse comes to check. Before every court date, the law guardian will come out. And then I have a resource worker from the division for myself who
right.
comes out. But then again, I'm also that foster parent who does go down to the division. And I'll just say, I need this person, that person. I call. So I do it differently than most. Like, I'm not the one to sit back.
No, you're very proactive.
I'm going to take it on myself.
Mm-hmm.
But not everybody does it, because a lot of these foster parents, you know, they work.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, too. Like, I'm thankful I get to stay home with this
right.
baby. But that's the other thing to know, too. Like, this baby that came from the NICU, once they're released from the NICU, they 99.9% of the time are supposed to go to a home with an at-home parent.
Yeah.
They're not supposed to go to daycare.
Right.
And that
because they have a lot
right.
of needs.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So for me, this is what my purpose is. This
yeah.
is what I was put here to do, and I do it with pride. I live to do this. There's nothing that I wouldn't do for these little people.
I know.
And, you know, if they call me fairy mommy, if they call me mom, if they call me Heidi, I'm doing what I was supposed to do.
Right. So I need to take another little commercial break, and I do want to talk about some of these legal things that you're trying to change, and we could talk about that when we get back.
Sounds great.
So this is Ruth Altamir Roll, your host for Counselor's Chat with Heidi Davis, talking about babies and foster care and heroin and all of that fun stuff. So we'll be back in just a moment.
Home Instead Senior Care. It's our passionate dedication to creating personal relationships between our clients and our caregivers. Visit our website at www.homeinstead.com/325.
You've got a friend. Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back to Counselor's Chat. I am Ruth Altamirroll, your host for today's program with Heidi Davis. We're talking about babies in foster care being born addicted to heroin and other drugs and her experience as a foster mom. And I'm really glad to have her as my neighbor. So,
Likewise.
So it's been really great to get to know her and what she does. So, I think she just got a text from someone that has a question, and maybe you can respond to that.
Yes. Basically, the drug addiction also, it's got a big stigma along with alcohol. And I have to tell you that I had no idea. I was completely ignorant to the addiction. And I had one of my parents with their daughter come over to swim in the summer, and I had a drink, mojito, and I said, "Here, would you like one?" And she looked at me with big eyes, and I had no idea, but she said, "I can't drink." And I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "No, a recovering addict is not supposed to have a drink." And okay. I just looked at her. I was dumbfounded, like I was in a deer in headlights. And I said, "Why?" And she goes, "Because it alters right. your being." And that's the other thing, too. Like, I really feel that alcoholism is something that is huge.
It's huge.
I mean, I have a very close friend who just lost her husband in regards to alcoholism. Mm. And, you know, to see what the things that she has gone through, I give her credit on a day in and day out basis because, you know, she has a daughter, but I mean, like, everything that led up until his passing, you never knew what she was walking into on that
right.
day, you
yep.
know, and neither did she. You know, she would go to work, come home, and you never know what you're going to get. Like, yeah, I'm looking for a job. He wasn't looking for a job. He was at the liquor store.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And you wouldn't think that alcoholism is as bad as it really is. And it is. It all goes together.
I'm going to say, I believe in the past year or so, the percentage-wise of people entering treatment for addiction, heroin has just surpassed alcohol. But alcohol has always been the top number one drug of choice of this country. Again, my education in addiction, I remember so clearly in one of my addiction classes that they talked about prohibition in the 1920s, that on average, the average adult in the United States drank 3 gallons of alcohol a year. When prohibition ended, it went to 9 gallons of alcohol a year. So now let's look at marijuana, okay? So now we're working really hard to make it legal. Look at the growth of the use of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, we don't have that many people with glaucoma.
No.
So, and I also say this, and I know there's some laws that prevent drug companies from doing research, but drug companies have so much money, they can lobby the government to do testing on THC and other chemicals in pot to see if they really, really, really do what these medical marijuana, they're not doing that. They're not breaking down the walls. We are talking about multi-million to billion dollars worth of money in selling pot. You don't think our drug companies want that money?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you don't think they have lobbyists to say to the government, look, I want to be doing research on marijuana to make sure that I could dispense it over the counter with, you know, with penicillin and all the other drugs that we dispense over the counter?
Mm-hmm.
Why not? That's my question. If it was really that powerful of a drug, and it is that powerful a drug, but it's powerful as an addictive drug. It's to me, whatever. I'm going to get on a rant about that. But but anyway, you know, don't get me started.
That's how I feel with this foster care stuff, because right now I have decided that I'm going to take on New Jersey.
Okay.
I am going to, right now my in is with the heroin. It's an unfortunate thing, but unfortunately for me right now, this is my in.
Right.
And then hopefully by the time I can get the heroin awareness with these babies, that will help for me to be able to pass this law. That, like, each state is different across the United States, and in each state we have this bill. And right now in New Jersey, the bill that we want to do is it basically is going to give the foster parents the right to be able to be in the courtroom to to put in, like, to say to the judge, no, X, Y, and Z, this is what we need to do. So whatever we were to say, the judge would hear. It would be basically like we would be testifying for the case.
You're advocating for the baby.
Exactly. And that bill is 913. And it was brought up to legislation, I guess it would be. I'm not sure exactly how it all works. But it was put in, and it was basically just looked over. So I've reached out to my assembly person at this time, and I basically went in. I wheeled the baby in. I went in, and I said, I want to change the law. And that's how it all started. And I took the baby with me so that there's a face
right
to this bill and why we need this. But when we were talking, heroin came up, and the office director was writing an email in regards to heroin. And it just was the right time, the right place, and that's what started the ball rolling. So I really feel that this is, it has to change.
Mm-hmm.
And it may take me 10 years.
It might.
It might take me 20 years. But I am going to change this law.
And if anybody who knows Heidi, she will change this law.
It may take me a while. But, I mean, you have to start small.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the other foster parents that I know, they have just been beaten down by the way things happen for the foster parents, you know, right. Because at the end of the day, we don't get to take our shoes off and just lay on the couch and, oh, my day. It's not.
No.
We're constantly going, like, you've seen my binder. Mm-hmm. I have a thick binder of everything that's going on with this child at the time, and I have a binder for each kid that I've had, and I can tell you anything. Like,
right.
You need to know when the visit was, who did the visit, what you need to know the last time the doctor was, shots and all this. I have it down. I know exactly what I'm doing. I know who to call for what. It may take me a couple minutes. But the other thing that I could say that I tell everybody that I know is always ask questions. You ask your questions to the law guardian, you'll get your answer. You ask the same question to the caseworker, you get an answer, and you just start to piece it together. And then you're able to get the information that you need to do this job. So that's one of my biggest things. Like, everybody, how do you do it? Just ask questions.
Yeah.
Because you never know what someone's going to tell you.
That's right.
Because we're only to know a little bit of information.
So this particular law, 913, is that what you said it was? 913?
Mm-hmm. Bill 913.
So what you're looking to do is to see to it that foster parents can advocate.
Yes. Basically, so that when we go to court, that it would be, we would be able to have not only, the bill would allow the resource parent, the relative, the pre-adoptive parent, or the caregiver to be included in the reviews or the court hearings involving a child that's in DCPMP custody. And why I feel that it's so important is that how can we advocate for this child, for the child's best interest, without our voices being heard. So that's what my goal is to say, okay, well, you know what? Susie came home after seeing her mom and, you know, she didn't sleep at night. Or the person doing the visit was saying Susie was being held and she kept looking back to see if that worker was there. Like, is this okay? Who is this person? Because think about it, an infant at 5 months old,
right,
in 7 weeks of not seeing your biological mother or father, who are
stranger.
These people? It's a stranger. And that's where we're at. Like, if they're going to be on hiatus for 6, 7, 8 weeks, months, years, fine. But you can't come in and you can't come out. If you want to be a permanent fixture, fine. Because we're not teaching this child stability.
Mm-hmm.
We're teaching this child, okay, well, you can run off and do what you want without any...
Right.
You know where I'm going with it? Like,
right.
There's no... comfort level.
Well, one of the things that we know about newborns is, you know, and I think that's one of the things now if my understanding, I haven't had any children of my own, but you know, you give birth to your child and they put the child on your belly. You know, like they want to make that connection right off. There's an imprinting that happens, and this child that gets
right.
born doesn't get that imprinting.
Well, I have to stop you only
okay.
because of a mother of three
right.
that had my children naturally. I was high risk, so I didn't get that.
Okay.
So I know exactly where you're going with
mm-hmm.
it. But as a foster mom, I didn't have that with Shariah.
Right.
I didn't have that with the other two that went home, and I didn't have that with this one. But what I can tell you is the moment that you pick up that child or you're holding that child, they look at you like, who are you? And then it's like they can just feel it, and you can just feel their bodies just relax.
Mm.
Like with Shariah, she was very scared. Like her hands were always moving, like in that nervous state, like
right.
that twitch. And then number two, she came to me and she was throwing up in a bowl.
Oh,
I mean, because that's the only thing she could control. And three and four, I got them both from the hospital. And I'm telling you, like, you could feel the tightness of them. And
right.
then it was like once they were in your arms and, you know, you start talking soothing to them. And you could just feel that stress just like they know.
Right.
And that's what I always say. It's like it's different from when you have a child naturally to loving someone else's child.
Mm-hmm.
You never knew you could love somebody else's kid in a way that you do. And, you know, the grief is real. When they go home, to grieve someone who's still living,
right.
it's terrible. It's,
yeah.
you know, absolutely awful to know that this little person is still alive, but are you ever going to see this person again?
Right.
I mean, it's real.
I know.
It's incredible that a little person could have such an imprint on your person.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't imagine my life without my little people, as I called them.
I know.
I
couldn't imagine you without your little people.
my big entourage.
Yeah. So we're going to need to wrap up in just a few minutes. If somebody wanted to find out more about this bill or back it, or how would they do that? Do you know?
Basically, what I did was I just Googled it.
Okay.
I just Googled it, and I put in, you know, resource parent laws or foster parent laws or rights. So, like, each state is different. Like, Pennsylvania has an awesome one, which I'm trying to basically copycat for New Jersey. They have a standard time frame. So, like, you have 12 months to either get your stuff together or that's it. Your rights are terminated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I want to get from
right.
New Jersey, because I feel like 12 months is a sufficient amount of time for the biological parent to do what they need to do. Like, for example, the baby that I have now, we're going on our 7th month mark.
Yeah.
Where we're going, I don't know. Nobody's going to know what tomorrow's going to bring. Do I hope that the parent does what the parent needs to do? Absolutely, 100%. Do I hope that reunification is key? Absolutely. But then in the next breath, if we're not making that mark by that 10-month mark, then the court needs to say, okay, here's the date for termination of rights. There shouldn't be extension after extension
right.
after extension
right.
because, like, a lot of these kids slip through the cracks.
Mm-hmm.
So the best thing that I can honestly say is for all other foster parents that are out there, get a hold of your assemblyman, get a hold of your congressman, your senators, anybody who you feel is going to have the time to listen to you. Because we're, at the end of the day, we're our own advocate.
Right.
We're our own advocate, and we not only advocate for ourselves, but for the little kids, too,
yeah.
that are in the foster system.
Yeah.
Because dogs are treated better, in my opinion. I feel like the dogs at the kennels are, you know, homed better. I think that there's background checks for a dog and all that stuff, but that's not what happens with the kids.
Yeah.
And it's sad.
It is sad.
It's a very sad thing.
So, Heidi, I really want to thank you and appreciate your giving your time to this. I know that, you know, this is a real passion for you and your heart is in it. And I'm really glad that I have the